So just first of all, what kind of a picture, how would you describe the financial difficulties you've been facing, say, over the past 6 years, as you've outlined here?
Thank you. I think that so I joined hospice in October of last year, and I think coming in and looking through the history of hospice and from both a impact point of view, obviously for patients and the community, but also looking at the books and the finances, that for 5 of those 6 years, we have not brought in as much money as it's cost. So we have been using our reserves to fill that gap. And for me, reserves are there to, help an organization. They shouldn't be there to sustain the day-to-day operations. And it's just reached a point now where we need to take action.
And you have confirmed that there will be some redundancies. Can I ask, is it known how many at this stage and in which departments?
No, we've very consciously and in a very thought-out way gone out with voluntary redundancies. We've done that for a couple of reasons. One is to just offer the best that we can to our workforce, who we're, immensely proud of and who are very committed to hospice. So by going in approaching it in a voluntary way, we can't be certain which people may or may not step forward. So over the next few weeks will be a process of us having lots of conversations, lots of open conversations, and supporting staff as they consider their own options. We will wait and see who steps forward, and that will help to shape the picture over the next few weeks. We are not certain about who may opt for it and who may not, so we have to wait and see.
Can you just remind us of the size of the hospice workforce? So how many people have been asked and are currently considering this voluntary redundancy?
So working at hospice, we have approximately 150 people. And as we shared earlier, it costs at the moment about £7.5 million a year to keep the doors of hospice open. We do not have a set figure of the number of roles or the number of people that we need to make redundant. We do have a figure in mind of savings that we probably need to achieve in order to make ourselves more sustainable. But at the moment, we don't have any fixed numbers of the number of employees.
Could you share with us that figure and of how much needs to be saved?
So we need to save approximately £750,000 a year. That is approximately last year, the deficit of hospice was sitting at about £600,000. So for us, that figure, if we can achieve that in savings, then we believe that in the years going forward, because of the generosity of the public, that we can sustain that level needed.
I understand that redundancies alone won't cover, won't make that, won't produce those savings. Service changes. Now, you've said that throughout this process, you'll prioritize protecting core services, inpatient units, hospice at home, Rebecca House Children's Hospice. So what does that leave behind? What services are you thinking about maybe altering at this stage?
We have had conversations about which services are perhaps either duplicated elsewhere in the system, or indeed what services should probably be provided by the wider healthcare system. But over the years, hospice has taken on some of those services. I'm not going to go too heavily into the details about which ones. Obviously, that's has a massive effect on the people and the individuals working in them. So for now, won't talk about the particular services too much. But certainly for us, the priority has been making sure that we can have the most impact for patients and their families. What are the areas that we believe we do that? So talking about, the inpatient unit, being there for people in their homes, and obviously the children's hospice, that's a very core specialist. It's what we do. It's what our people are very skilled in, that end of life and complex symptom management.
And regardless of whether those savings are made, that figure that you stated before, you are still calling for that additional government funding, aren't you? So tell us about this campaign and what you're asking government to consider right now.
So it's certainly very early days of the campaign. I think we announced, today is the first time that we've been talking about it. As we have shared, we have about 24% funding from the Isle of Man government. If you compare that to the UK, if you compare that to Jersey, for example, that's well below the percentages that those places have. And indeed, if you look at the UK, they have a much higher funding than us, but they're also closing beds and indeed closing whole buildings of hospices at a rate that we've never seen. So even at those increased amount, hospices all over the UK are struggling. So for us at 24%, it's a real challenge. That means that, you know, the Manx public is stepping up, and 75% of the income here is provided by the public. There is only so much that we can ask the public to do. People are so generous with their money, with their time, and the support and the volunteer time they give to hospice. But there is only 85,000 of us, and you know, we can't keep pushing on that generosity of the people.
I'll just state those differences here. You've mentioned 24% of total income from Isle of Man government compared to 44% in Jersey and 36% in the UK. What talks have you been having in recent weeks with the DHSE and Manx Care?
We have been communicating a lot, and we've certainly had face-to-face meetings a number of times over the last couple of months. I think they've been well aware, you know, very much preceding me joining hospice, of the, you know, the struggles and the financial deficits. You know, they too also face a number of challenges and pressures on their own budgets. But it's, you know, my job and the team's job to make sure that hospice and end-of-life care is at, you know, at the forefront of that. And to, we are the only hospice on the island. There is nowhere else for people to go. And so for us, it's about making sure that we're seen as a core and very important part of the healthcare service on this island. And we need more funding.
Let's just talk a bit about the fundraisers as well, and those millions that they've raised for hospice each year, and, you know, in over the past 4 decades. I suppose there'll be many around the island thinking, how can I help now? What is it hospice would really love to see over the next year from the fundraising point of view?
Well, I can't ever talk about our fundraisers and volunteers without sort of almost starting every sentence with a thank you. They do, you know, amazing things. We literally would not be here were it not for the Manx public and their generosity. I think in particular what we would ask people to do is, when we do start with our campaign of Fair Funding Hospice Isle of Man, that, you know, people get behind that, they understand it, they can, you know, ask us questions at any time. We're a very transparent organization. We're quite happy to share, you know, facts and figures with you. People are very welcome to come here and chat to us. So I think really asking for the public's support in order for us to make sure that hospice is here, not just tomorrow, but in 5 years and 10 years for the island.
In terms of the charity shops that we do see, the hospice shops that we see on the island, we've got quite a few in Douglas and elsewhere. What's the future for them?
I think the future for the shops is actually very secure. You know, for us, the shops are a fundraising tool. The shops exist purely to make money for hospice. They're very, very good at it. We year on year make more of a profit from the shops, which, you know, all of it gets put back into hospice. Again, heavily reliant on our volunteers to do that. But for now, it doesn't make sense for us to pull resources from the shops, because for every person that works there, it generates even more income for hospice. So yeah, the shops are here to stay.
And we know that hospice supports hundreds of patients and with end-of-life care each year. So there are families all across the Isle of Man who know or have been affected in some way, or, you know, have had interactions with hospice and support from hospice. So what, bearing that in mind, what would your message be to the Isle of Man government right now?
I think to listen to those people, because since joining, I can't tell you the number of times that I'm stopped in this building, I'm stopped in Tesco's, I'm stopped at my children's school, where people share with me the difference that hospice has made for them and their family members. It's at such a delicate and vulnerable time that people need hospice. And it's been there, you know, year after year, decade after decade, for so many people on this island. And to see that at risk, I think it's probably quite a scary thing for people mm-hmm. to hear, the thought of hospice not being here. So I understand, as I said, the pressures on government, there's many, many competing priorities. But hospice, end of life and palliative care is absolutely a priority.
Mm-hmm. And you have been very clear, obviously, in person just now and in this statement. You say this is a position you can't maintain without risking the long-term future of the charity. What reassurance can you give that hospice will still be here in 4 decades' time?
I think the biggest reassurance we can give is that there are so many people here, working here, who this is not, it sounds a cliche, but it's not just a job. People care deeply about this place. We are all completely invested and motivated to do the right thing. And right now that means making tough decisions. Mm-hmm. That means, you know, having quite confronting conversations. But we do that because we know it's the right thing to do, and that will ensure that hospice can be here in years to come. And we will, you know, that's certainly my job. It's to make sure that it exists far beyond when I'm here. Mm. And we'll do whatever it takes to make sure that that happens.
What has the reception been like from the staff and the workforce that we mentioned before so far to this press release, to this news?
Honestly, it's been quite an emotional day. So we did it, you know, just this morning, we had as many staff as possible in the room, lots dialing in. It's emotional. There's been lots of tears. People, as I said, people care deeply about hospice and that they care deeply about our patients. So I think it has absolutely affected the staff. I think they understand the reasons, they get it, but there is an absolute sense of sadness that there will be certain services that we have to pull back on. And, you know, people on the whole that love, you know, working here. It's a lovely place to work. It's contrary to what some people may think. It's a place of actual, you know, sort of joy. It has a beautiful culture. It has a beautiful feel to it. So I would say for today, it's a bit of a heavy feeling here at hospice.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.